Hello, this is Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for September 2018. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday month at 3 p.m. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hopefully it will be of interest to everyone. The month of September begins with Labor Day on the 2nd, followed with Grandparents' Day on the 8th, and Patriot Day on the 11th. The Boston Marathon takes place on this day. The United States Constitution was approved on September the 17th, 1787. Fall or autumn begins on the 23rd, and Rosh Hashanah begins on the 29th. September is also National Recovery Month, a time when we might be able to help someone with a severe problem. We have several stores that have previously reported in past episodes of Thought for Food. Raleigh's Taco Bell Cantina on Hillsborough Street opened in mid-August, ushering in a new era of fast food in the region where a cheesy gordita crunch finally gets the pairing it deserves, a Baja Blast Mountain Dew with tequila in it. Yes, Raleigh is one of the very few cities in the United States with a booze-serving Taco Bell cantina. The giant chain's new offshoot of restaurants marketed to urban eaters. There's no drive-through. There will be words like shareable and small plates right next to the time-honored standbys like the Crunchwrap Supreme. The Taco Bell cantina will open at 10:30 a.m. Located next to Hillsborough Street, Smashed Waffles, the cantina has outdoor seating, communal tables, and an indoor mural painted by local artist Clark Hiptolito. The menu has 6 draft beers, including 3 from Sayville's Mash House Brewing Company, which makes a beer specifically for the cantina. The Bell Tower Cerveza, named after North Carolina State's famous bell tower. Also, there are slush drinks diners can spike with tequila, rum, or vodka, as well as froze, the frozen version of rose wine. It was revealed in January that the Taco Bell cantina would open in Raleigh when local owners submitted plans to City Hall. There's seating for around 30 in the dining room, plus 3 outdoor tables. While the world reconciles with cold coffee, Raleigh's Slingshot Coffee Company continues to push the boundaries. The company, one of the nation's oldest bearers for cold brewed coffee, is getting into the soda game. After finding success across the country, landing their drinks in Target, Whole Foods, and Publix, the husband and wife team of Jenny and Jonathan Bonchak just moved into a new 13,000-square-foot brewing facility in the southern part of Raleigh. Slingshot has unveiled 2 coffee-based sodas in artfully stubby cans. There's a cream soda with orange and vanilla and a cherry soda. In an interview, Jenny Bonchak pointed to century-old soda Manhattan Special as evidence fizzy coffee drinks aren't as new age as some may think. Slingshot's dabbling in sodas began in 2014 when the company ran a sometimes coffee shop called Weekend, open on, you guessed it, Saturdays and Sundays. As bottling became their main business, they couldn't do both and closed the shop, but kept the sodas on the brain. Picking 2 flavors was simple, Ms. Bonchak said. Cream soda is Jonathan's favorite. Cherry cola is hers. Coffee has a natural sweetness, she said. Sodas don't have to be a ton of sugar and a ton of sweetness. The sodas have 10 grams of sugar in an 8-ounce can compared with 39 grams of sugar in a 12-ounce Coke. The Bonchaks have worked in craft coffee for a decade and a half, spending time at some of Triangle's top roasters, including Counterculture Coffee, from which Slingshot is made. They've seen specialty coffees grow from a niche luxury to today's golden age, where local roasters turn out world-class beans and espresso bars can resemble chemistry sets, making drinks of precision that taste like flowers and chocolate. It's not a controversial declaration to say coffee has never tasted better. Jenny Bonchak says soda is just another expression of a way to tease out another side of coffee. It's not just a cup of brown that our grandparents drank, she says. That's what's exciting about the coffee movement. we really see it as a canvas. The possibilities are endless. The new Slingshot sodas are on sale in a few specialty stores in Raleigh, with wider distribution to follow. On Monday, August the 20th, the long-awaited Morgan Street Food Hall opened for business. This is Raleigh's first foray into the food hall trend spreading across the country. The food hall will begin its soft opening, no advance publicity, said Neil Hanley, whose Hiberian Hospitality Group owns and operates the food hall. But there's nothing soft about this year's most anticipated project that's finally open for business. They'll be open from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday through Tuesday, and from 7 a.m. to 2 a.m. Thursday through Saturday. They're originally scheduled to open July 23rd, but a delay was announced following a media preview last month. What diners will find in Morgan Street is a dark wood corridor of small food vendors, each specializing in one kind of cuisine, from southern to empanadas to Lebanese to burgers. And there are also more than a dozen vendors, from a florist to a jerky cart. Morgan Street was the first food hall to announce its plans to open in the Triangle, moving into the former Jillian's Bar. It's a major piece of the continued redevelopment of downtown Raleigh's warehouse district. Combined with the Dillon building a block away, which will have restaurants, retail, and a Weaver Street grocery store and the new Union Station, the width of Raleigh's destination blocks is expanding rapidly. We wish them success. The food hall war is heating up in downtown Raleigh. Transfer Company's Food Hall announced recently a half dozen new vendors and restaurants to join the project at 500 East Davy Street. The food hall, one of four opening in the Triangle over the span of a year, has redeveloped the 50,000 square feet of the former Stone's Warehouse and the Carolina Coach Maintenance Shop. Owners also announced the food hall will open in early 2019, a delay from the earlier projected opening this summer. Owner Jason Queen said the renovation ran into construction setbacks. Transfer Company's been in the works for 5 years, winning development and purchasing rights from the city in 2014. The vendor announced comes just 1 week after the opening of Morgan Street's food hall on the other end of downtown Raleigh. Blue Dog Public Market opened this summer in Chapel Hill, and the Durham Food Hall is aiming to open by the end of the year. Transfer Company will reconnect the city with downtown historic Old East neighborhood through a shared celebration of local food knowledge and community, Queen said in a news release. As a walkable destination, the food hall fosters connection and collaboration while serving the food needs of the growing downtown with an innovative approach. We carefully curate our tenants, some of the best in the nation, and we're humbled to be a part of something so special. Things are really looking up in downtown Raleigh. In last month's program, we spoke of the problem of plastic drinking straws and efforts to replace them. The story continues. A snack bar at the Carolina Club golf course is stocked with hits, peanuts, packages of nabs, draft beer, and a warming oven packed full of foil-wrapped hot dogs. Nothing is out of place at the golf course bar at Grandy, half an hour from the Outer Banks. Nothing except the straws, which are paper, not plastic, and stamped with the declaration, earth-friendly. These straws place the course squarely on the razor's edge of an environmental movement gone mainstream, one that's finding its way from major cities to the Triangle and North Carolina. The rising tide against plastic straws includes Starbucks, which wants to eliminate its plastic straws by 2020, as well as cities like Seattle, which has banned straws and plastic utensils in restaurants. Though challenges remain to eliminate plastic straws altogether, including municipal infrastructure costs and the difficulty of changing long-held habits, what was once plopped into a drink without a second thought is increasingly considered thoughtless. As opponents argue, the straw's convenience doesn't justify eternity in a city's landfill. I call it straw woke, says Crystal Driesbach, the executive director of the local environmental group Don't Waste Durham, and a crusader against plastic straws for the better part of a decade. The problem with typical plastic straws is they cannot be recycled. So you use it once and it lives in the environment forever, she says. Dreisbach is so devoted to her home of Durham that she mailed 250 personal letters to local restaurants challenging them to rethink their environmental practices, especially targeting styrofoam boxes. She heard back from only one, the Durham bar, Bull McCabe's, which switched to compostable containers. Back then it was old Crystal, she's a tree hugger. Dreisbach said, now we've reached a point of awareness and it's really created a tipping point as consumers. I'm glad I yelled at a brick wall. Locally, Durham has led the move against straws, including a Skip the Straw campaign in March, organized by the group Keep Durham Beautiful and endorsed by Mayor Steve Shule. More than a dozen restaurants pledged to cut out plastic straws for the month. This summer, Duke University's Dining Services Department announced its on-campus eateries and dining halls have banned all disposable plastics, including cutlery and straws. The Carolina Inn in Chapel Hill announced on social media that it, too, is eliminating plastic straws and stirrers in its restaurant Crossroads. The truth is you probably haven't thought much about plastic straws. That's the problem, activists say, that the cheap, nearly weightless, thin plastic ends up in drinks more by habit than preference. America's staggering daily straw use is as much as 390 million, according to a market research study quoted by the New York Times, totaling many billions per year. Starbucks' announcement in July marked one of the biggest victories for straw critics. In the daily deluge of iced lattes and coffee, the company says it doles out about 1 billion of those iconic green straws every year. Other companies cut straws as well, including the Marriott and Hyatt Hotels, Alaskan American Airlines. Seattle is the largest city with an on-books ban, although New York City is considering one, according to articles from the New York Times. I have no idea what will be the final outcome of this debate, but I'm ready to enjoy my beverage without a straw. Have you heard the expression, interested people want to know? Would you want to know if you harbored a gene linked to Alzheimer's or another incurable disease? A new poll finds most Americans would. About 17% of Americans have already gone at least one kind of DNA test, and 52% of the remainder say they'd like to, according to the poll from the Associated Press's NORC, Center for Public Affairs Research. Curiosity about ancestry is the main reason, but 60% of the people say they'd want to know if they carried a gene associated with a disease that is presently incurable, the poll found. It seems we as a people are ready to face the music. Bill Addison, the restaurant interviewer for Eater.com, roves the country trying more restaurants every year than any other critic. After making several visits to the area last year, he released this year's list of 18 best restaurants in the country, and Charlotte's on the list. Hey Sailor, the fish camp honored by Kindred Restaurants Joe and Jay Kindred, earned Addison's nod as one of the only 18 restaurants to make the list. While citizen reviewers on sites like Yelp.com have sometimes been hard on the Kindred's mid-century modern remake of the old Rusty Bucket, Addison was pleased, joining other national critics like Brett Martin of GQ, who called Hello Sailor's Gumbo in a roundup of the nation's best in April. For Addison's Eater review, regardless of the time of year, the meals here feel like an escape into summertime. Anything with crab, deviled in a dip with pimento cheese, represented as claws arranged on top of a pool of wasabi tobiko mayo, brings joy, as do platters of fried shrimp and flounder and lobster rolls featuring Joe Kindred's famous milk bread. Worth noting, Addison is currently the chair of the committee that oversees the James Beard Foundation's Chef and Restaurant Awards, which so far skipped any finalists in the Charlotte area, although we've seen some semifinalists. Next up on the national records list will probably be Bon Appetit's annual list of the 50 best. Will Hello Sailor continue to roll? Hello Sailor isn't the only North Carolina restaurant to make news this year. A Spanish tapas restaurant in Asheville has made Food and Wine's list of America's 40 most important restaurants of the past 40 years. Before Asheville was a trendy restaurant city, it's considered to be today. Katie Button was making magic at Curate, her brilliant Spanish tapas haunt. The magazine writes about the restaurant at 13 Biltmore Avenue in the city's downtown area. Button, the executive chef, helped nudge along the country's love affair with Asheville, which Food and Wine says continues to draw top U.S. chefs. Curate means cure yourself in Spanish, according to the restaurant's website. The restaurant's in a 1927 building that was Asheville's bus depot for decades, the restaurant's website says. Button has received several James Beard Award nominations, including three for Rising Star Chef and others for Best Chef Southeast. She was a finalist this year for Best Chef Southeast. She also owns the restaurant Night Bell. The restaurant's top rating is the latest national honor for Asheville. In February, GQ magazine named Asheville the coolest city you've never been to. Asheville is also recognized nationally for its craft brewing industry. The city's first won the title of Beer City USA in 2009 and continues to edge out competing cities like Grand Rapids and Portland almost every year, the Asheville-Buncombe County Economic Development Coalition said on its website. The world champion cantaloupe grows slowly in Danny Vester's garden, hidden from the sun, adding a pound of orange flesh a day until it reached a scale-bursting 65.9 pounds, a world record. At first glance, Vester's superfruit resembles a half-deflated beach ball perched on the scale at the North Carolina State Farmers Market, like a grandfather toad, too lumpy and misshapen for anybody's breakfast. But for Vester, a retiree and cancer survivor from Spring Hope, the prize-winning cantaloupe represents months of pampering, hiding his vapor under leafy branches and feeding it nutrients. He beamed when North Carolina Agriculture Commissioner Steve Troxler announced the record-breaking weight for his cantaloupe, a pound heavier than the old 64.8-pound record set in Alaska in 2002, according to Guinness World Records. You can usually spot the one that's going to be the best, Vester said. You might put more leaves on it from the others. Mr. Vester's achievement is grander, considering that cantaloupes normally grow to the size of a crystal ball, weighing as much as a hardback novel. To understand the size of a 65-pound melon, consider these comparisons. This piece of fruit weighs more than the average 9-year-old boy, according to DisabledWorld.com. If Vester were to take his prize melon on a Southwest Airlines flight, he'd have to pay $75 overweight fee. The average cantaloupe weighs about 3 pounds. The Kitchen.com reports, so Vester's beauty represents nearly more than 20 melons. Vester's record breaker has a seed line dating back to a giant cantaloupe grown in 1993 from which he grew a 55-pounder, which provided seeds for a 59-pounder, which in turn spawned the champion. 4 years ago, Mr. Vester grew North Carolina's biggest ever pumpkin, a 1,404-pound whopper that filled his pickup bed with a half-inch to spare. He named it Sammy, and the record stood for 4 years. To date, he is the only North Carolina grower with 3 1,200-pound pumpkins, according to officials at the North Carolina State Fair. He briefly held the state's watermelon title in 2017 with a 237-pounder, losing it later in the season to a 316-pound beauty grown by Todd Dawson of Garner, who attended Tuesday's weighing ceremonies. I always like to see North Carolina at the top of everything we do, Troxler said. It's just another to add to our list. This choice cantaloupe, however, will get sliced open for seeds and science only. The testier fruits keep to a reasonable size. At this time of year, we're reminded that the season for fresh, locally grown tomatoes is coming to an end. Regardless of how we prepare, eat and enjoy them. Make the most of them while they're still available. At other seasons of the year, tomatoes are available. But have you tasted them? What was your reaction? Someone told me that they may look good, but all they do is take up space. I tend to agree with that assessment. Enjoy them while you can. Move over, pretzels. There's a new snack in town. North Carolina-based donut giant Krispy Kreme has opened a new kiosk in the Crabtree Valley Mall. The kicker, it's shaped like an oaken box of donuts. The company has a number of these donut box kiosks around the world, notably in the United Kingdom. Now Krispy Kreme is bringing them to the home side of the pond. At Krispy Kreme, we're always innovating to find new and exciting ways for our fans to enjoy our awesome donuts, said Krispy Kreme CEO Mike Tattersfield in a news release. We're thrilled to bring Krispy Kreme kiosk to life for the first time in the U.S. at Crabtree Valley Mall. This is an experience unlike any other. The new kiosk will be up and running late in August on the mall's first floor near Macy's, around the corner from Crabtree Food Court. Mall snacking is all about giving in to foods one wants exactly when wanted. There are plenty of places around Raleigh to find the iconic Krispy Kreme donuts, and Crabtree's marketing director, Brian Aspel, said he believes a new kiosk will help shoppers chase those cravings. We're delighted that Krispy Kreme has chosen Crabtree Valley Mall to launch this exciting new concept in the United States, Aspel said in a news release. We know our shoppers will enjoy having a variety of Krispy Kreme favorites available throughout the day. I'm sure we'll all see more visitors stopping by the mall to satisfy their craving for fresh Krispy Kreme donuts. Do they have a coffee pot nearby? There seems to be no limit on new ideas and those who follow through on those thoughts. Example, cocktails may seem more at home in stemware than aluminum, with the concoctions living outside the koozie-cuddled realm of canned drinks. But what about beachside drinks? Durham Distillery thinks it has just the canned thing, canned cocktails. I saw an opportunity to make a canned cocktail that was the reputation of a cocktail you find at a bar, but in a can, said Melissa Katrinczyk in an interview. In late August, she and her husband Lee, who co-owned the distillery, started canning wedding reception Hall of Famer, the gin and tonic, and the nightclub standard vodka and soda. They'll be sold in $15 four-packs in North Carolina's AB stores in late August. These products join North Carolina's distilling scene, which is as hot as it's been since Prohibition, with more local vodkas, gin, and whiskeys hitting the market every year. There are other canned or bottled cocktails in existence. Melissa Katrinczyk acknowledged naming the Nuclear Green Jose Cervo Margarita and a Malibu Rum Pina Colada, among others, but she said they wind up on the sweet side. It turns out there's a reason why the mass market canned cocktails could be improved. They're not made with actual liquor. Technically, their malt beverage is the same as beer, allowing them to be sold in grocery stores and bottle shops, according to North Carolina ABC regulations. Durham Distillery's gin and tonic is made with Conniption American Dry Gin, a house made with the distillery's cucumber vodka and club soda. Because they contain gin and vodka, they can only be sold in ABC stores in North Carolina. Concentric had hoped to get an exception from ABC, but wasn't offered one. The first run of the cocktails yielded about 5,000 cans of each gin and tonic and vodka and soda. The next run, scheduled for September, plans to triple that. Expect more variations in the future, most likely a Moscow Mule made with gin instead of vodka and a house-made ginger beer. Would you want to drink your cocktail from a can or pour it into a glass? Harris Teeter's parent company, Kroger, is phasing out single-use plastic bags by 2025. The grocery giant said in a statement issued in late August that it will transition to usable bags at its family of stores, which includes Harris Teeter's, Marino's, and Fred Meyer's, and several other popular grocery chains. Kroger said its chain QFC, based in Seattle, will be the first retailer to phase out plastic bags, and the transition will be completed in 2019. It's a bold move that will better protect our planet for future generations, Kroger CEO Rodney McMullen said. Only a few other retailers have eliminated single-use plastic bags. Whole Foods got rid of them in 2008 and now uses only recyclable paper bags. The decision by Kroger, the second largest grocer in the United States, could pressure competitors to follow suit. We're the first major retailer in the U.S. to do this, said Jessica Adelman, Kroger's vice president of corporate affairs, told the Cincinnati Inquirer newspaper. Harris Teeter spokeswoman Dana Robinson said the grocer needs several years to make the transition because we don't want to assume that what makes sense for one customer works for everyone. We still need time to finalize our plans, as a commitment of this magnitude will take time. For now, shoppers should not expect to see any immediate changes at their Harris Teeter, Robinson said in an email. Kroger said 100 billion single-use bags are thrown away in the U.S. every year. Several cities and states, such as Chicago and California, have bans on single-use plastic bags at large retail stores. Others have fees for customers who choose to use carry-out paper or plastic bags at checkout, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. The move away from plastic bags is a part of Kroger's Zero Hunger, Zero Waste initiative, and aimed at addressing environmental and hunger issues. As a part of their program, Kroger said it sent more than 91 million pounds to groceries from groceries to local food banks and pantries in 2017. A growing number of Americans are turning to fish oil supplements to improve or prolong their health, but recent studies indicate these golden capsules may not be that beneficial. A recent analysis conducted that fish oil capsules do little to help patients with heart disease. This mega analysis published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Cardiology in January of this year pooled the results of 10 clinical trials involving almost 78,000 participants in the history of coronary heart disease, stroke, or diabetes. Fish oil supplements did not reduce the risk of heart attack, stroke, or a number of other cardiovascular outcomes. Another recent study published in the New England Journal of Medicine concluded that fish oil supplements do not help patients with dry eye disease as compared to olive oil supplements. This randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study gave 3,000 milligrams of fish-derived omega-3 fatty acids to 349 patients with moderate to severe dry eye disease daily for 12 months, while an additional 186 patients received the olive oil placebo. The fish oil recipients did not have significant better outcomes than the folks taking the olive oil placebo. Even though fish oil supplements do not seem to be living up to their promise, evidence does support that dietary patterns. We've run out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service.